Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
What was the first championship game in American football history? And can you imagine that this game, that the father of American football, Walter Camp, would miss the game to go and officiate a JV game down the road? Well, we have this and more coming up from our guest today, Timothy P. Brown of Football Archaeology, as we investigate the championship game of football and its origin. Coming up right after this.
Check it out, Pigskin Dispatch video.
Yeah, woohoo!
You know, we just recently finished up our traditional football seasons, where we end with championship games at the college football, the NFL, and the high school levels. Well, when was the first championship game? Well, we have the guy that has the answer visiting us today, Timothy B. Brown of Football Archaeology. Welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Good to see you once again. And I was going to make a campy joke here, but I've opted not to. See, because Walter Camp, you know, was
it went right over my head there for so you had to explain it to me for me to get it.
Yeah, that's generally the mark of a bad joke, you know, when or bad audience, one of the two.
Bad audience in this case, yeah. Not the outside audience, but the one that can hear. Yeah, went right over his head. Anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about Walter Camp because Tim wrote an article recently titled "The 1882 Yale Princeton Football's First Championship Game." What can you tell us about this, Tim?
Yeah, so it's in some ways, championship didn't mean the same thing back then. So I'll explain that in a minute, but what was considered the first championship game was played in 1882. And, you could say it was the national championship game because, Yale won the game and, they were the national champs, retroactively. Because they were, their league, which at the time just included Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and Columbia, they were the premier football teams in the world, and there were probably only maybe there were 20 teams playing football back then, if that. So they were the national, whoever won this game, were the national championship. But the odd thing about it was that, and this carried on for a while, but like in their like August or I think it was May meeting of the IFA, the Intercollegiate Football Association, they decided that whichever teams tied for first and second in the league or in the association the year before, they would play the championship game on Thanksgiving Day in New York City. And so you kind of go, okay, well, why would the two best teams in 1980 or 1881 play the championship game in 1882? It seems a little bit strange. But at the time, it made sense at the time because, they just didn't live in a world where you could, so the idea of postseason play would have made no sense to them for college football. And, the game was supposed to be this big spectacle in New York City. And so people needed to make plans. And so you couldn't finish the season the week before and then put the two teams out there, and expect to have a good crowd in New York City, and all the alums could get, you just couldn't do that stuff back then.
Now, was this the actual players that played in 1881? So if you were a senior in 1881 and you played for,
No.
okay.
So if it was, so who the two teams that played in the game in 1882 were based on their team's finish in 1881. But it
So
was the
different
18,
rosters than they
yes, it
had.
was the
Okay.
1882 roster that played in the game.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't had, didn't mention that in the tidbit. But so that's kind of, it's kind of a weird setup, but it became this massive social event. The game in New York City on Thanksgiving Day was a big deal, and whoever was playing, and tip, as it turned out, most years, the two best teams the previous year were the two best teams the next year, and it was Yale and Princeton. I mean, for about a 25-year period, Harvard butted in there every once in a while, but pretty much it was Yale and Princeton. So, they ended up playing all the time. But the other side of it was that, championship football. If you look at old NFL rule books, a lot of times they'll talk, like I got confused about this and somebody straightened me out on it. Because it, like the there was a rule, like when they first required helmets to be worn, which is like NFL was like 1939 or something like that. And it said, helmets must, protective headgear must be worn in all championship games. I was like, okay, well, that means they don't have to wear it during the regular season. Well, no, what they meant was any game that counts towards a championship is, they had to wear it, because NFL teams back then, they play all these exhibition games and they play somebody midweek or on the road back from, New York or something. And so championship sometimes meant league. It equated to league game.
So what we would call today meaningful games.
Yeah, well, I think it's more that it's a league game, that it
Okay.
counted in the standings. Okay.
Okay.
And so anyways, so in 1882, what happened is, so there's four teams. Columbia loses to all three. They lose to Harvard, Yale, Princeton. Harvard beats Princeton, and then Yale beats Harvard. So, at the going into this Thanksgiving Day game, Columbia's 0-3. Yale and Princeton are both 1-1, and Yale's 2-0. So if Yale wins, boom, they're 3-0. And then, but if Princeton beat them, then Harvard, Yale, and Princeton would all be 2-1, right? So they tie for the championship. So it was just one of those games where it's like, there was a lot of snow the day before, so they had to hire all these guys to come in and dig the place out. And I don't know what it was like, they didn't have snowblowers, so they talk about using pickaxes and all kinds of stuff. So I'm sure the field was in really fine condition the next day. But in the game itself, it turns out that, both teams kick a goal, because this, and actually that's the other thing. 1882 was the last year that football was played without a points-based system. The only way to score was to kick a goal. Touchdowns didn't count for anything. There were no safeties yet, or at least not, those didn't count as a score. So anyways, both teams kicked a goal in the first half, so it's 1-1. And then in the second half, one of the all-time great things happens. A guy named Tompkins for Yale carries the ball over the goal line. And back then, you had to touch the ball to the ground. You had to touch down. You had to touch it down, which is why it's called a touchdown, right? And so they had this thing called a maul-in. So if you were, the other team could keep you from touching it down. They could hold you up and try to push you back out of the end zone, in which case you wouldn't have scored. And so anyways, they had a maul-in that went for about like 10 minutes. Fans were coming out of the stands and getting involved in it. And eventually Tompkins, is able to get down to the ground, touch the ball down, and then a guy named Richards kicks the goal. So Yale ends up winning 2-1. But now, I mentioned at the beginning about the whole campy thing. I haven't mentioned Kemp since then, have I?
No, you've been very silent on him.
Yes. Turns out he wasn't there. So he's in the books all the time as having played in 1882, but and I didn't look at early season, but he didn't play in the last couple of games, and he was not there. And in fact, he was refereeing the Harvard Yale freshman game up in Cambridge at the same time this game was going on. So, anyways, seems like it kind of a strange thing to have the championship game going,
Yeah, wow.
and then you got the freshman game going. But that was Harvard Yale. It wasn't Yale Princeton, which was a championship game. So, anyways, so old Walter wasn't there. He missed it. He missed a good one.
And Yale still won, so
And Yale still
without
won.
one of their better players. So. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So.
interesting. I didn't realize that. That is kind of strange. That's a the big game of the year, and he's one of the premier players for Yale at that time, and he goes to officiate a freshman game.
Yeah, maybe, like he was in med school by then, so who knows? I don't know.
I thought you were going to tell me he got called the clock factory. He had to wind a watch or something,
No, he wasn't working for them yet. He wasn't
No? Oh, okay.
didn't do the time. He wasn't doing his time
He
yet. So
wasn't doing his time yet. That's a whole nother one with
that's a whole
that was
other
another
episode.
episode that you did before with him being caught in a slammer and everything else. But that's a good one though, folks. You want to check that one out too. That's a good one. But Tim, you have these great stories of yesteryear in the game of football, the game we love, and you explain so much, and you enlighten us on things like Walter Camp not being at the big game like you did today. And you do this in your tidbits, and maybe you could share with folks where they can catch on to some of these tidbits.
Sure. Just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site, and you can subscribe, in which case you'll get an email every time I publish a story. You can follow on the Substack app, which just means it's like it'll come into your little inbox. Otherwise, bookmark it. Or just check it out whenever you want to. And I've said this a couple times, but I've got like 1,400 articles out there on all kinds of football stuff. So if you're looking for some little factoid on football history, there's maybe less so if it's NFL, but especially college football, I've covered a lot of territory. So use the search function, see if you can find what you're looking for.
All right, Tim. Well, we appreciate you writing all this and preserving this football history, and we appreciate you joining us here today, and we'd love to talk to you again next week.
Very good. Look forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.